That's why I'm all in bed. Nobody gives me sympathy.
Hello, and welcome back to our podcast, where the fanfic of a fanfic that itself is a synthesis of Fallout, the popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about a pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi. I'm joined once again with my co-host, Weird. Say hello, Weird.
I can't imagine who you might be addressing. However, you do have the privilege of being in the presence of one Sir Weirdington Esquire. I'm very sad about the state of capitalism's impact on art, specifically today. That is the Sir Weirdington Esquire you have this afternoon.
Art is antithetical. Capitalism is antithetical to art. Something, something.
So it would seem.
But yeah, hey, we're back once again. I'm sick and grumpy. Weird is probably also grumpy.
Maudlin.
Wistful. But yeah, we're making another one of these. Yay! We're on to chapter 30. We're getting really close to the end of this book. And specifically when the whole story goes completely off the rails and never comes back. And So in a couple of episodes, we'll do yet another one of those recaps and talk about the sort of story as we've seen it so far and all that stuff. So, you know, stay tuned for that in a couple episodes.
Oh, no. That's going to be real hard because it's been a mess. it's been difficult. Like, we had an entire episode we had to take a stop and, like, try to account for, like, what's supposed to have happened up to this point.
Yeah. You had to bring in a map and, like, figure out where everything went. Weird, you should probably tell us what happened last week, though.
What? Virtually nothing. I think I can, like, wait a minute. Oh, no, I was mistaking last week for the week before. Yeah, I was just gonna say they met Zordon and yelled about erasing a baby's memories.
Yeah.
But, okay, so they've ventured further into Steel Ranger territory. The assault of the Fire Nation is in full swing. The Reapers have sent, like, sort of their first wave, I guess, in the form of lesser gangs. A bunch of which mentioned, but the only one we dealt with last chapter was the Glamazons, the Flash Femmes, who, as it turns out,
Jem and the Holograms.
Jem and the Rapists. So Jim and the Holograms are apparently, their entire modus operandi is that they capture and rape men as retaliation for, like, sexual assaults that they experienced in the past. That you have to be, like, traumatized by, like, sexual violence in order to join Jim and the Holograms.
Yeah.
A horse and the Holograms, we'll say.
Well, the character's name was Diamond, so yeah, it was.
Oh,
it was
fucking right. Man. So mostly they have to fight Jim and the Holograms. They meet two of the eponymous Steel Rangers, and apparently, their combat armor has, like, zero meaningful, like, the powered armor that they're encased in has zero meaningful combat effectiveness. It's apparently easy to cow tip them. Like, you just push them over and they, like, do the, like, you're introduced to a Voight comp test scenario. The armored pony is belly up and moving its legs pitifully, but you're not helping. Anyway, yeah, they meet two jabronis and help them fight Jim and the Holograms. Along the way, they come into, like, a building that has, like, a working internet connection to, like, a somehow self-maintaining server somewhere that has, like, a Discord chat between two siblings, one of them being, of course, inevitably, a member of Macintosh's Marauders, because it was a unit of something like 20,000 strong, one would have to assume.
No, it was like 8. They're just all really important.
1,800,000.
8. They're all just really important.
And the only people anybody knew at the time. And because every single historical document refers to them. Like, the minuscule odds. Anyway. So yeah, they're talking about the pony version of Deadlands as unsettling implications as that has for as a thing of foreshadowing. Also, very many layers deep, very appropriate for our fanfic of a fanfic, that it should, like, have to introduce into its own world the concept that people play tabletop role-playing games, and that, like, yeah, it's just so many layers of meta thick.
Without a hint of irony.
So, apparently, anti-healing, bad vibes radiation... is produced by like some kind of silver metal, as we find out as Blackjack, the only character capable of proactive action, breaks a device powered by bad vibes metal. At some point during all of this, everybody remaining on the team reassures her that like. They have, like, kind of a deeply abusive emotional dependency on Blackjack. And the story frames this as a heroic coming together of friends. And I even vaguely recall that, like, there's a darkly hilarious thing wherein, like, no, we're going to stick with you all the way. But you could turn back and like, go anywhere else. No, because we care about you. When, in fact... No, they actually couldn't. they've passed the point of no return. They are stuck here.
They're in a war zone, like way deep past the no man's land, like deep into enemy territory. Like, there's no way for them to go back.
They do in fact have no choice in one way or another. And now my brain is starting to develop some sort of weird meta theory that, like, in fact, it's demonstrable that none of them are capable of like. Proactive action. None of them on their own are capable of changing anything in anyone's life, and so like they made the dark joke last week, the almost Twilight Zone-esque, but Blackjack, this story is told in the first person. If we leave your line of sight, we no longer are.
You just cease to exist. Well, they just fall limp because all their like, do they lose any like because they have no autonomy outside of like. Blackjack's orb of influence, so they just like sit where they are and wait for her return.
Because characters don't do anything off screen, do they?
Like, not particularly. I mean, Rampage is apparently probably having adventures off in the distance since she checked into the party.
I don't know. I'm more thinking of I don't know where anyone would be able to find it, but I recently saw some footage of taking a sandbox game and taking the in-game camera to an overhead view, like so it jury-rigging the code so it's a two-player game. One player is just floating in space above the protagonist, and the other the protagonist character is in the game looking around, and it demonstrates the like processor saving power. Of a gimmick that's done in rendering of those games, in that it's really freakish and disturbing and solipsistic. Apparently, in most sandbox games, the environment ceases to exist when you stop looking at it.
Yes, and a lot of old like sandbox
trees,
games,
shrubs,
like
buildings.
Yeah, like yeah, and a lot of older games, like nothing would spawn.
Cone of view, they stop existing. So in light of this being a very Bethesda experience. That is what the entire cast is worried about. This anytime Blackjack is not looking at them, they're incorporeal. So yeah, that was a lot of padding and waste of time because I'm reluctant to get around to. So they fight Jim and the holograms in a hologram factory. Jim herself has a hologram shield. And it's a big fight, but instead of, like, the party doing anything, like, clever, out of nowhere, a giant laser, explodes to the side of the building, eradicating in one sweep, Jim, and presumably the rest of her holograms. And then, I'm very confused about what's supposed to have happened next. The building's infrastructure is hacked, projecting a hologram of Golden Blood?
Yeah. Basically.
Okay. And Goldenblood, like, says, I want to join your team. And Blackjack says no. And it starts glitching out. And the party shoots the building, or the building just collapses on its own. Something happens to disrupt the hologram.
Like an EMP grenade gets thrown at it, and it, like, disrupts the system.
And I guess, like, whoever's firing laser mortars from 1,000 kilometers away doesn't follow up on the laser mortars. I mean, I guess because they want to protect the Maltese.exe, but then again, they were able to... They were pretty confident in their ability to fire it the first time without pinpoint scanning technology from whoever this is, wherever they are.
Yeah.
A lot of questions.
Yeah.
None of them very interesting.
Yeah, basically.
And so we end our in the chapter for the day.
Oh, you missed the fact that Glory also falls in a hole and is presumed dead.
No, I mean, because of all, it's so deeply consequential.
I get, like, this would be the part where I'd normally talk about a perk, but we don't even get a perk this chapter because she doesn't level up again. She only gains 75% of the way through experience track to level up this time.
This is so dumb.
It is dumb. It's really forced. It's going to be really dumb when we find out why this is happening. But anyways, I guess I should launch into this week's chapter, shouldn't I?
If you have to. I mean, we both know that you do have to, but, like, maybe could you not? Like, it's possible that we could,
yeah.
Yeah,
we could just quit. We could. But no, I'm not, I'm gonna finish this. I'm gonna see this through. Boy, oh man, this is a dumb chapter and I hate it. So, we open up to Blackjack being all sad about Glory dying and, like, running through all these, like, it goes through all these flashbacks of different conversations that she had with Glory. You haven't even gotten to the punchline yet. So it goes through the whole thing and she's like, she's so sad that Glory's dying and she realizes in this moment that she truly was in love with her the whole time. And then, like, Light Hooves, who was there from the previous chapter, shows up and, like, he's like, I would kill you here, but I have a deal. Like, that's not part of the deal. So he, like, stabs her with, like, because he's in power armor and the power armor has, like, a scorpion tail that, like, whatever. He stabs her with knockout drugs. And then BJ goes on, like, another mind quest where she, like, goes through her past and with her mother, talking about death and what it means to die as a little kid. And then the next fucking scene happens and Glory's alive and they're in a bed together and it's not a dream or a hallucination. She's just alive again. Like, Sombra couldn't even do, like, three paragraphs and they'll bring her back into the next chapter.
So are they chained to the bed? Are they in a cell? Like, is it a nice bed? What?
So they're in captivity. But to, like, get through this part really quick, because it's just a lot to explain and dumb, Glory made a deal with Light Hooves. Light Hooves would save Blackjack and leave them alone if she gave them the targeting talismans and also told him where they could find more of them. So that's the deal. And since Light Hooves is a consummate operator, he, like, took the deal because he didn't really see a reason for them to, like, be enemies at the time. But yeah, nothing matters. No consequences.
I'm trying to remember what this is bringing to mind exactly. Like, I can only, like this is a pretty, like, it's a joke that's had its rounds and, like, has had a few different variations, but, like, I'm just imagining, like, envision this scenario with me. Imagine this Zuckerbrucker's airplane naked gun sort of scenario. Protagonist walks up to an ice cream truck. Do you have, Freezy Pops? No, we've got Choco Pops, though. Okay, I guess I'll take a Choco Pop, hands over the money. Then the ice cream van guy, gets shot in the head, and we, like, zoom in on the protagonist, and he flashes back to all the fond memories he had with the ice cream man. Do you have Freezy Pops?
Yeah.
It's not a lot of it's not a lot of, like, sentiment to, like, look back on.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. So the I guess, like, the problem I always, I continue to have with Glory, on the second reading is I never realized how much her character is just Blackjack's love interest, which is like really shitty and reductive to the story. Like, I really hate that, like I hate this chud writing of like, well, you know, I'm gonna give her a love interest and that's it. Like, that's the only decision made. Like, sure, there's a bunch of like superfluous details, but she virtually does nothing in the story except for be in a romantic relationship with BJ. It's incredibly frustrating. Like, sure, she uses guns sometimes and does some technology and doctoring, but like, sorry, what?
We've already established Somber as a consummate sex haver. someone who has definitely had the sex. More than once, surely.
Yes.
And knows what it's, it's very familiar with that experience of sex having. And so, of course, he would, like, be familiar with, like, you know, the basic dynamics of a relationship. And, yeah, as a published author, like, who are we to question, like, his knowledge of, like, even basic fictional romantic, like, relationship. Like, the entire point of having a relationship in a story is to, like, so the characters reflect each other and, like, complete each other or even, like, failed to mix in spectacular ways that informs us about both characters and their interaction and development as a pair affects them, that like to demonstrate what kind of a person is in one context as opposed to another. Like, yeah, all of that. Like, I'm sure Somber is extremely familiar with those things, and so this is.
Yeah, a real Lothario.
He just knows that this relationship is supposed to happen, but he doesn't know what those are like.
yeah. But we got more to chunk through on this stupid train. So they hang with Lighthooves for a while. It's a lot of dumb shit that I think is the stupidest thing in the world. Lighthooves rambles a super long time about the complexities of Enclave politics, where, like...
Oh, God, of course.
They question, like... Well, I'm not going
to
go into...
Welcome to captivity. Allow me to exposit some more, now that I have the opportunity. Would you like to know some more about the workings of our Nazi Sky Palace? Of course you would.
The deep and intricate Nazi politics...
I want to interrupt you one last time. Like, while it's on my mind, using the word relationship to describe the thing happening between the Fallen and Blackjack kind of gives away the game of, like, what's wrong here. It's not a relationship. They're not relating to each other.
Yeah, it's codependency.
Lovers that, like, yeah, that like... They are boyfriend, girlfriend. This is like an activity and not a state of being. Like, the relationship doesn't apply because they're not relating to each other in any way.
Yeah.
Other than physically.
Well, there is a bunch of scenes of them being like romantic together and stuff, but like it's all very hollow because like the backbeat of the whole relationship is that like Glory is like depends on Blackjack to have some sort of like moral center so that she can keep emotionally stable, and Blackjack is the same way for Glory. It's pure codependency. They need each other to function on a mental health perspective, which would almost be interesting and could almost say something, but like it's just like Somber doesn't get that that's what he's writing here, and thinks that this is like a whirlwind romance for the ages. Like I said, though, this is all... None of this matters anyways, because, like, inevitably, like, BJ's gonna end up with 21 anyways, and, like, none of this relationship matters. There's a lot of stock put in this relationship, but nothing matters of it. But, yeah...
Great, okay, so they're in a cell, sharing the same cot. What's his smirk, comes in and starts, expositing about more fucking Hooftwaffen lore.
Yes. He elaborates that he's like, well, I don't want to destroy Thunderhead. I want to save it from itself. And there's a lot of incredibly brain dead libertarian conversations that are basically like, to summarize a bunch of notes I have here that I just like cannot stand. Lighthooves believes that the military, because the military runs the government in this setting, which is true, Thunderhead's more liberal, progressive nature is eventually going to get them destroyed because the military will turn on them eventually. Lighthooves wants to create a new enemy for the military to care about, which he's going to turn the surface into a deadly disease-ridden nightmare so that Thunderhead never goes back down on the surface again and it keeps everyone safe in the status quo. It's the most insane plan, and the problem with this... So this is a thing I keep saying about the story. Villains in a story...
There's more than one problem.
Well, yeah, but the villains in a story...
Do go on.
Villains in a story kind of like tend to talk a lot in stories, and the whole and generally speaking, when you write villains, you're kind of writing like characters who have wrong opinions that sound correct in the moment that are ultimately refuted by the hero, either by punching them in the face or actually disentangling their opinion or shooting them and making some pithy one-liner. Regardless of how they do it, the hero sort of exists to like counterbalance the villain's ridiculous plan, like evil nonsensical plan, but that would be in a good story written by actual competent writers. In this story, inevitably every time a villain talks and brings out their shitty opinions, everyone else in the story kind of just goes, well, I don't necessarily agree with your motives. I do understand what you're getting at though, and I think you're ultimately correct. Like, he could be completely out of his ass saying that like Thunderhead is going to get destroyed, and there's a couple of times where Glory gives some like minor defenses against this. She's ultimately just defeated by his like incredible logic and reason that of course this has to happen. There's a shitty moment later in this. Blackjack's like, oh, Glory and Lighthooves would never work together, and Lighthooves like, Glory's like, well, I don't know about that. BJ's like, he branded you and like turned you out for dead, and she's like, well, he did do it because he wanted to stop a war. And I fucking hate that so much. Like, she's presented as being a smarter character because she can look objectively and look at the, like, bigger scheme. But, like, this is insane and moronic. Like, his plan is stupid. His plan is, like, we need to create a false enemy for the military to chase after so that, like, so the status quo can be preserved, which they even admit can't work because the Enclave is slowly starving to death because they can't produce enough food. They physically cannot do enough to make sure that their people survive in the way they are. But and this is stated in both the main story and in this one. But Stomper still says dumb shit like this in his story, and everyone agrees with them.
It's comprehensively fascistic reasoning.
Oh, don't you think?
Like, yeah, no, but like it usually is. Like Stomper is almost certainly a fascist. He might not know it. I'd be willing to put money that he would get extremely heated and flustered if you were to accuse him of that directly. But this is Carl Schmitt shit. We've come again to the gun. We've come again to praise gun. We've come again to like Somber being, as a writer in this case, writing this story in this chapter. So stupid that he's accidentally proposing like a parody of his own
work.
Politics, because this could be set up as the perfect satire of Nazi politics. That all we need to do in order to like maintain our coalition is keep finding enemies. Never mind that like once you have engendered a total apocalypse and made your closed system hyperbonically sealed, like completely sealed, airtight, where resources can no longer flow in, and only bullets can ever again flow out, meaning that there are no more enemies, and like the eternally enemy seeking like status quo power that be will inevitably turn inward again and go after the remotely leftist, like the anything remotely an enemy. Like this is the most hilarious kicking the can down the road conceivable. That like you're going to spare Thunderhead for what, a few years until, like, the starvation really takes hold? And, like, the outside world is so shattered and, like, unfightably bad that, like, they have no choice but to inevitably go after Thunderhead after all for, like, to harvest what, to glean whatever resources they've probably, in their fevered imaginations, imagined Thunderhead is hoarding from them, and just to maintain internal cohesion. It really is sort of a demonstration of how apocalyptic isolationist nationalism is.
Oh yeah, this is the perfect ethnostate problems. The thing I would like to like stress to our readers, audience, again, if this was framed in such a way that it was actually meant to be sort of mocking the sort of like broken mindset of this Nazi asshole, it would be fine. But the problem is that this is being leveraged as an excuse of why he has to do it. It's okay, Thunderhead is becoming too liberal and we need to step on its neck to save it from itself. Therefore, I'm allowed to do anything in the justification of that goal, including, like, forever ruining, like, outsiders entirely and just making us even more xenophobic because it's in...
And cutting off any hope of, like, ecological restoration, which will, like... Do something about your food crisis, and your labor crisis, and your breeding pool crisis,
and all your crises. Yeah, and but like it's and again, it would be fine if it was in fact that the villain was refuted by the actions of the characters. But every single time this happens, the main characters give such limp dick like responses that are ultimately just defeated by the smarter, eviler Ubermensch bad guy. This happens time and time again in the story, but Lighthooves is an aggressive example of it. Like, I've talked about it before that I still like Lighthooves because I think he's a very, like, good, affable villain. Like, the idea of, like, a Nazi who's really charming is kind of a fun villain archetype, but, like...
Worked in Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's just the problem that, like, the sock puppet that he is for the opinions he regurgitates and the way that they're structured to be ultimately the only way to save the Waste is... fucked up and disgusting. Like, this dude is a parasite.
Yeah,
but like,
let's move on to the next thing because I've already done a long like I wish I could remember the exact episode number that I went on a long rant about the like psychology of chuds and the anyway, I've already gone on a long rant about the psychology of chuds and
disavowal,
how,
like, yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember all the details of it, and I'm not in a position to, like, regurgitate it as coherently at this exact moment. But yeah, basically that they understand that their opinions are evil and bad, and so they have the bad guys say it. But at the end of the day, it's what they actually believe.
Yes. But yeah, we've got a long time on this point, but so I don't want to belabor it too much longer. They're basically told that they'll be let go free of charge. Nothing bad will happen to them on the specific condition that Glory has to give a full, unmolested, undoctored confession of all of her crimes, with air quotes, because Lighthooves needs the military to be put at ease and wants her father to stop like harping on him. And so he can just do his job. So that's the plan. But not before they randomly decide to have some weird kinky sex, which I'm not going to talk about too much because, like, I'm just going to, like, kind of laugh because, like, the way that the writing of the scene is so, like, it's so clearly uncomfortable with the subject material that it's trying to portray because, like, there's no even remote, even, like, metaphorical talk of the, like, mechanism involved in what they're doing. It's so clouded in like in really, 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 really vague talk that like it just I can't help but like get the vibe that this feels like really uncomfortable for them to have wrote, which is kind of like, then like, why did you do it at all? Like, why did you I don't know. And there's also like just another weird point where it makes a big deal about Blackjack being super boring and vanilla at sex, which is like really dumb and like a weird thing to like include with your main character. And I always point it out because it always comes across as really weird and contrary to the rest of her character. She's like super promiscuous and she's super polyamorous, but she's also like really bad at fucking. Is like those things don't really like knit well together. And I think it's just because, like, again, I just don't think that Sombra knows what a bottom is. It seems to be his real problem. Christ. Anyways, Glory, they put Glory on the big VO screen. And she has a conversation with her dad. So this is the first time we ever get to see Glory's dad, General Sky Striker, or whatever his name is. He just looks like Pony Big Boss. Like, he's just like a gruff old looking pony with an eye patch and looks real cool. But they argue back and forth for a super long time, and it's really just like dumb bullshit. It's just more dumb politics stuff combined with a bunch of family shit. BJ awkwardly interjects, and like it's kind of an excuse for BJ to get Glory's dad's blessing of their relationship, which is just goes nowhere and is completely pointless. There's a afterwards, there's a bunch of conversations about complex like enclave politics that fly over BJ's head, and everyone acts like she's an idiot because she doesn't get it, which is really like annoying and frustrating. Because like none of the enclave like politics make any sense. They're just it's all dumb bullshit. It's all made up libertarian garbage. So like it doesn't make sense. Like you would be confused if you were a normal person hearing that oh yeah, all the clouds are precarious city states that are all knitted together under a military faction, and like they're all super xenophobic, and it's all a weird ethnostate, and like Thunderhead's getting kind of too liberal, so they gotta like squash that. Like none of this matters either. Like it's this and the zebra mythology. There's so much of this that like I can't help but talk about it because it's related, but none of it matters. It's all incidental. Like we will never need to know Thunderhead is being attacked in the story by the rest of the Enclave. It does not matter. It's just that they're doing like. The Enclave are Nazis. We don't need anything more complex than that.
But we do if the author is fundamentally sympathetic to a Nazi point of view.
Yeah. Well, I can guarantee what happened is Somber took one look at the Enclave's presentation in the original story as being just kind of bad guys, like just kind of like a Nazi analog, and went like, I want to build those up and make them more complicated, and then basically just turned them into the Confederate South. It is essentially the way that they're written, or specifically how the Confederate South writes about itself. This is a war of
noble lost cause.
It's a war of surface aggression. But yeah, but that just kind of like knits more of Glory's back like plot line up, and we don't really have to worry about it ever again for a long time. But yeah, Glory spouts off her weird, horrible, like, Nazi apologizing bullshit again. Makes me hate her again.
You'd think that, like, by now, like, there's been an awful lot of chapters with her. You'd think that by now she would have grown.
No.
As a person.
Nope. She does not grow, even slightly.
Well, it's because in the mind of the author, she has nothing to apologize for or learn.
Yeah. Glory did nothing wrong. All right, I'm gonna go through the rest of my notes here. I don't actually have that many notes because very little actually happens in a story outside of this fucking Enclave shit. They get attacked by manacores, and the weird, like, manacore mutant pony shows up, and, like, they duke it out for a while, but they can't, like, actually fight her. They're, like, in the middle of a rainstorm, so they decide to just duck into a storm drain and, like, run away in the sewers for a while. There's an admittedly kind of tense sequence where they're of them, like, getting flooded into, like, a like, underground, like, underwater factory where, like, the water is like flooding into rooms as they're trying to get around, and like there's this mad scramble of them trying to get out of the building before they drown, which all culminates with them getting like ejected out of a fucking pipe, quite a distance away, right in front of a fucking caravaner, who they saves them, and oh, I gotta like take a second. Gotta collect myself to talk about this dumb shit. They get saved by a caravaner, names himself. He's like, oh, howdy, I'm Keeper. He's like this old gold miner sounding like fucking caravaner, like talks in a bunch of westernisms and like slaps his knee with his hoof when he tells his own jokes and stuff like that. So he talks about that. He's like, oh, I've been a caravaner, scavenger around these parts for years. And they talk shop and try to buy some stuff off of him. BJ like reminisces about a gun, like craves a gun that does like most people assumes doesn't exist, which is a running plot thread with this, because it's something I haven't brought up in a long time about this story. Blackjack has a sexual attraction to guns. It's really weird. Christ. I don't want to talk about this. It's so dumb. But they talk with him for a while, and he like she cottons on that he's a character named Finders Keepers, who is the like who is the head of the Finders, the merchant faction. Because she recognizes him in the photo that Caprice. Caprice had a photo of him in her bedroom. They talk about him, and he's like, well, you know, the Finders have always been the faction that keeps out of everybody else's business, and they've always just been all about the money, and that's why we're better than everybody else, basically. It doesn't necessarily say it like that, but it kind of implies that like impartial traders are better than everybody else. And he just says that the only thing that like fucked this up is when Usury started trying to sell slaves, and she gets like punished for her efforts, and she's now like working in his caravan because she's been like kicked out of her own slave camp after Red Eye took it over, and like now she just like cleans up Brahmin shit for her life now. But yeah, cool, we get to find out a whole bunch of backstory of a bunch of characters that you could not care about. But first of all, we get to talk about fucking capitalism, pony. So Finder Keepers explains that he was a stable pony from stable 95, and his stable was focused entirely on anarcho-capitalism, by which I mean
Great.
Capitalism without any regulations. The entire stable ran on money. Every single decision was based off of money. Mm-hmm. And he was kicked out for being too good at capitalism, because he flew too close to the capitalism sun and started charging people for air, and they eventually just...
That sounds like regulatory behavior to me.
Well, they...
How dare they censure him for...
Well, no, they self-regulated by taking up their guns and telling him to leave. But yeah, they kicked out...
That violates the NAP. This place is not true to its values.
But,
They're stealing his air right now. They violated this man's property rights. They rose up in a disgusting collectivist action, seized and redistributed all this man's air.
I think so. That would be much cooler than I think what happened is, I think they literally just like bought out his seat on the like as overstallion. They just did it through the like money way, because you know free market regulates and self-regulates. The invisible hoof of the market kicked him out. But yeah, him.
So they conducted a seizure, a corporate seizure of his air rights.
Yeah, but with their own money, so it was fair.
Oh, Mike, this is still a state action. Like this is the act of an abusive state. Like the air rightfully belongs to him, whether or not he's like on this governmental board.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that like it's much dumber than you're playing it up. They just bought his seat on the the over stallion council and then just kicked him out.
Wait, from who?
From him. They just pulled their money and bought it from under him, because like no, all the government positions were also like had a price on them.
Wait a minute. Why did he? Does he explain why he like accepted the sale? Like why he accepted the money?
Because that's just the way they all are. Because he just took the money.
Well, wait a minute. What is, if this is a vault? Like, does he? Okay, so he's exiled now, am I to understand that? Or did he just, like, John Galt it? Like, take all of their, like, fun, their vault fun bucks and
don't know. I don't know which version of that. It's not super clear. But
like, because what use is the money to him if he's not, like, man, this is so
bad. It's real dumb. This is all just so that he can be a super capitalist. But yeah, he was a super capitalist, and him and his, like, cabinet got kicked out, and then they immediately tried to all sell each other to slavers, and he got sold into slavery, and then he bought his way out from the bat with his own bootstraps, and then him and like a bunch of other are no good nicks got together and formed a little posse of main characters and decided to take the hoof by storm. So him, Big Daddy, Professor Zodiac, Crunchy Carrots, and was there another one? I don't think so. Regardless, they all join together, and then they all rallied around Dawn, which, you know, is Glory's mother, and it was essentially like their version of Blackjack, and she was like a Hoof native, and she knew her way around. But they, like, you know, they took the waste, they stopped a bunch of stuff. They tried to make the place a better place, and eventually the whole thing fell apart when Dawn got whisked away up into the sky by Sky Striker, and the crew tore itself apart over that decision, and they've all been sort of estranged from each other ever since. But so the reason why all the factions up to this point really haven't been like fighting each other has been mostly just a gentleman's agreement, but now that's been broken because of the leak. But he also rambles a bunch of fucking stupid shit that's dumb, and I hate it. He mentions that the Hoof is a place of endless scavenging for some reason. Like, he doesn't understand why, but no matter where you go and no matter what building you enter, you will always find stuff to like scavenge from a place. And even if you come back there multiple times, you'll find more and more stuff. It's almost as if like the Hoof itself is like restocking the area. Because, I mean, you know, just make weird video game stuff that a Jedi can also like make this really similar to Stalker for some reason, because like it hinges a lot on the concept that like basically the Hoof is the equivalent of the Chernobyl exclusion zone in the game series Stalker, which people are like mysteriously drawn to for whatever reason, and like that's why there's a bunch of these like factions vying for control there. Fuck, man, so dumb. But yeah, it's a bunch of pointless nonsense to learn all this backstory shit. But yeah, like, all the factions, we're all best buddies. I've said this multiple times. But the scene is kept abrupt when Blackjack goes to try and like chat with Yuzuri, the slave owning chick, because she wants to see if the like bounty is still being upended or if she's still gonna have trouble in the future. But instead, takes a bad tumble, I think, down some stairs. Given that she's a noodle horse still. But they also find out that underneath her eye patch, apparently like a tumor has been growing in her eye socket for the last couple of days. So they have to perform some emergency surgery on her. So you know what that means? They find a memory orb and dunk her on the head with it.
Inevitably, like it's at this point, that's all anybody else knows to do with her. Like somebody has got to be like reading these memories, like. It's not as though people willfully, like, gave themselves fucking amnesia. God damn it. Yeah, no, like, that is something that's very important to consider. Every one of these orbs is an injury to someone.
Yes.
Represents an injury inflicted on someone. So that means that, like, either somebody felt so important, like, somebody felt this memory was so important for posterity, they were willing to undergo that, or they didn't want to think about this, like, event ever again, in a very literal sense. And so that makes it all the more weird that they're just rolling around in the ash of the wasteland. They're just scattered around and higgledy-piggledy.
Yeah, they're like packing peanuts. They're fucking everywhere. You have to trod through an inch high of memory orb to get from any location. But anyways, memory orb noise, memory orb noise, memory orb noise. This one's another pretty inconsequential. Okay, it's not inconsequential. It's actually a huge deal, but it's really stupid and inconsequential in the context of what's happening. It's Fluttershy and Golden Blood talking all romantically. This is the like memory orb that confirms that they were a couple over the course of the Wasteland. Which again, thanks for eliminating another queer character, Somber, out of the equation. Big ups for that. But she's talking about how she's pregnant with Golden Blood's child, which is the most I'm trying to find a word for it, like smug, arrogant thing to do with your fucking Mary Sue OC, of like, oh, my guy is so suave that even one of the canon characters is going to have his child, is just, God, man, it's so fucking hacky. But this is the baby that she'll inevitably have a miscarriage over. And be super distraught over. This is also, like, that explains how the, like, medical center that they went to got built, which is not very important. And then we get, like, a cut of another, like, memory in this memory orb of, like, Golden Blood hanging out with a guy named Horse. Horse runs a company called Vibronco. He's all about technology and specifically, like, computer mainframes. But also, like, they find this weird metal underneath the hoof that's, like, this weird silvery metal that, like, can't be affected by, like, normal things, like a press to, like, gauge its, like, strength is so strong, like, it can't, it's so strong against it that, like, the machine just breaks around it and stuff. It's some kind of mysterious super metal. Stay tuned for that. It shoots out of the machine and kills somebody by lodging it into somebody's head. It's so hard and so indestructible. But yeah, BJ comes out of the memory orb, one tumor down, one eye tumor down. But she's like out like in the middle of the night in a lot of pain, and like Yuzuri, who's had her whole life ruined by like BJ, like takes a gun to her head and like threatens to kill her, and BJ's like, do it, because I don't care anymore because I'm dying in like 6 months anyways. And then, like, ruminates on, like, what is it to surely destroy someone when you've taken even revenge away from them? Which I think would be, like, a more impactful thing if, A, like, we gave a shit about this character at all, Yuzuri, since she's only just now appeared in the story, and B, wasn't a fucking slaver. like, boo-hoo, you ruined a life of this evil, evil, heartless person who decided to start slaving people purely for profit.
And who held people's air hostage for money! And is very proud of that!
Christ.
This is a satanically evil figure.
But it's okay, because they're all bros now. Fucking... Oh, man, I just read my notes and it, like, took me back for a second. Keeper fucking hands Blackjack another fucking silver bullet. You know, like, the super god bullets that, great. Like, he's just like, yeah, hi, great. I had this box, and, like, you can have it, because I don't have the gun that he uses. Which I mean, like, that's also boggling to the mind. Like, if this guy's such an ANCAP, like, how the fuck is he giving away anything? But, we're almost done this chapter. Then we can dissect any points else we have left. But yeah, BJ sends over Project Steel Pony over to Zodiac through the internet, basically. And Glory asks if, like, Project Steel Pony could do anything for BJ. Zodiac admits that it's not possible. They don't have, like, the machining or fabricating, like, factories that could, like, build the cybernetics fast enough for her to be, like, fixed. So that's a no-go zone.
But what about a tube?
Tubes
worked out pretty well for you. How difficult is it to construct?
Well, Zodiac is also like cybernetic in the tube as well. Like, she still has like some
all right.
Cyber. Hey, most of the time the logical consistencies work out. It's the themes that are bad in the story. But and then we get to a dumb cliffhanger again. Yay! So along the way,
yeah, solid logical consistency, like the existence of only one boat in the entire
setting. Well, one working boat. But BJ's been tracking where the rest of her crew has ended up through Scotch Tape's like Pip Buck like tag, which they have, because I guess at some point Scotch Tape had fell into the inventory. But they go to meet back up with their friends, and they're like, okay, cool. And then they like see a bunch of steel rangers who are all clad in like in big armor, and it turns out all their friends have been captured by them, and then like this big titanic hulk of a steel ranger in like ornate black armor with like gold trim and these giant hydraulic hoofs shows up, and he's like, step aside, citizen, this is steel ranger business. And that's the end of our like chapter, is the show off this cool power armored pony. But yeah, so parting thoughts on our chapter, weird?
No, just yeah. It's just tiring again to see, like, well, I have some, like, very, very edgy true opinions that most people aren't ready for, so I'm gonna have the villain say it, but, like, the thing that makes him the villain is that just nobody's, like, ready for raw truth like this. Get that again. I am kind of shocked by, like, we're confronted with, like, the most evil, like... Soviet Soviet Captain Planet, and he's like, fine, he's got, you know, we're bros with this like monster, this moral monster.
Well, yeah, because he didn't do anything wrong. He just, you know, completely, like, he did it all through his own efforts. He pulled himself up by his own bootstraps
and the bootstraps of the people he owned, you know, the people that he captured and owned against their will. It just hurts too much. It's just like this one, like, I don't know. Just today, I don't have the strength to get particularly angry. Like, listener, I'll hit you back next week with the recap. Is there anything better we could be reading?
Yeah, I suppose. My recommendations keep coming with fun asterisks every week, I guess, because I haven't had a whole bunch of time to like read a ton of new things, but I have been reading new things. So the recommendation I'm going to make is with the like warning that I haven't finished this story, but it's what I've seen so far I enjoy. So I'm going to recommend a relatively newer series too called Photoequestria: The Chrysalis. Points of why I think that this story is interesting. First of all, the protagonist is a changeling, which if you don't know what a changeling is, it was a villain race in one of the seasons that are a shape-shifting bug monster race that feed on love to survive. And that's an interesting concept for a protagonist, because a huge emphasis on the story is that the Wasteland is a place that love is kind of absent from, so the character is constantly starving and dying. Desperate to try and like make emotional connections with other people, and there's an interesting like counterplay of like a very alien bug-like mind and how it like approaches the concept of relationships as a form of food source, and how it interacts with others. The one like con, well, it's a con to me, but it's like I guess a caveat to the story is that this story is very clearly written by a gun nerd, and you can always like tell when it's a gun nerd writing these stories. Because they spend so much time telling you about gun trivia. And, like, relatively well-known gun trivia that they kind of assume is, like, you know, hidden arcane secrets no one has ever heard of. Like, the fact that silencers are not mute buttons for guns. They just make guns subsonic so they don't echo as much. And, like, it makes a huge deal about subsonic ammo and all this. It just goes on and on and on about guns. Which, I mean, is, like, fine, but it's not interesting. To a reader, it's total chaff, and it's just a huge indulgence on the author's perspective. But like, it's not necessarily bad because they clearly know their homework. It's just that like, it doesn't contribute anything to the story. But otherwise, the story seems pretty interesting so far. There's a cool interplay between characters. There's a really interesting dynamic between the main character and her companions. It doesn't have any of this dumb video game shit in it. There's no leveling up. The main character doesn't have a pip buck. It's just totally absent of all of the like obnoxious video game abstractions that these stories have seemed to be obsessed with. So that already wins points in my book. But yeah, so yeah, that'll be in the show notes. That's my recommendation for the week.
All right. Well, I hope that we're still doing a little bit of renovation back here in the bunker. I hope it wasn't too distracting this week. Meteor X is still approaching, but I haven't gotten the infrastructure up. I'm hoping to set up a Patreon, but part of that Patreon is just a mad scramble to like appease whatever audience I can find. Meteor X is approaching, and it is looking to wipe out me in specific. So. Your likes and comments your likes especially our iTunes account doesn't have enough stars on it for there to be like a publicly visible rating on it. So if you could just go ahead and drop 4 to 5 stars on that bad boy, depending upon the degree of your generosity, I would certainly appreciate it, and I think so would Fi.
Yeah, but more specifically, like please help Weird. My Weird is very sick, and he needs money to live.
But yeah, comment on if you have a Twitter, thou art fine. Always post, say, a link to the Podbean of the podcast. And I see a lot of you motherfuckers put hearts on that post, but none of you say anything.
Or retweet it.
Or reblog
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and like... And...
You jerks. Like, don't half measure this shit. What's wrong with you? So yeah, like, if you could spread word of mouth about our insane project, I think I'm going to, Thought Slime recently put out in his most recent video, advertised that he's willing to advertise other leftist channels, and I think we sort of count, so I'm gonna see about trying to email him, but, any praxis can't rely on authorities alone, like, big names, we need your help, we need you to, like, live up to your values. If you like this show at all, do what you can in whatever small way you can to promote it. And that can be as little as putting a 5-star vote on the iTunes, thumbs upping the Pod Bay download of it, or posting about us on social media. Do whatever you can. We'd appreciate it. Because, like, in a vacuum, like, selling air. I don't think we can afford air for much longer, Fi. I think this might have all been a terrible mistake.